Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at NewBalance.com.
All right, everybody, we're back again for another episode of Tennis Bets Live. Mitch Michaels, Pamela Maldonado, Kenny Ducey on all your platforms, YouTube, Tennis Bets, Twitter, as well as the Tennis.com Facebook page and available in podcast form. It's an interesting Madrid Masters, a lot to discuss. We're doing this Thursday show. Going to lead you right into a good match. You know, we got Medvedev, Lehecka in the quarters, wrapping up the men's quarterfinal round, and then the final semifinal round for the ladies. Two of the top three players in the world, Aryna Sabalenka and Elena Rybakina. So some matches to recap, some matches to discuss. But first, let's check in on everyone. Pamela Maldonado, bottom of the screen. How is everything in the tennis betting world in your life?
Well, I think I was the only one of the four of us who was on Cerundolo against Fritz. And it's not that I'm not a believer in clay lore. It's not that. It's just I really think that Cerundolo is just a better player on the surface, and based off of what I've seen in this tournament, he just let me down in certain spots. He overplayed some shots, he got antsy, and because of that he came out the loser in this. Y'all were right, I was wrong, but outside of that, I'm actually really happy that we're gonna have a new Madrid Open winner.
Yeah, there's a lot in that regard. I know, and I appreciate too. I mean, that's why people like this show, is that we admit when we're wrong and when, you know, we miss the mark. Kenny, you know, you were on Claylor. I think you made a good point. You're on Claylor, but maybe more so, maybe only so in Madrid.
Yeah, I mean, look, this is, I made this mistake last year. Ironically, he lost to Cerundolo at the French Open. And, you know, we thought he was making some great strides on the surface. It just turns out that sometimes in Madrid at altitude, you can look very good on clay. I mean, look, I do feel as though you look at, what was it, 3 years ago, like his, I think he had a 40-point tiebreak with Sonego in one of the sets, first or second set. Like he's had like good matches at Roland Garros, and he's had good matches on clay. And, you know, I'm not going to count U.S. clay court tennis in Houston as real clay, but look, I mean, in theory, you know, a big hitter like this, yeah, he's going to be a little more limited on clay, but as we've seen with the top players, and Fritz is one of the top players, they adapt their game. They work on their weaknesses. They work on the surfaces that they can't necessarily find success on. I mean, he hasn't gone as far as what Francis Tiafoe has done and played Golden Swing for a couple of years. But, you know, I think we're seeing improvements here. I think he can hit the ball pretty well in Madrid, and he's a weapon at this tournament. And I, like I said on that show, you can't look at the result last year in the third round and say, well, he shouldn't have lost to Zhang Zhang. I mean, that guy was playing insane tennis. Like, just, I mean, I don't know who would have beaten him on that day. So, you know, sometimes you can learn a lot from watching previous matches and get a feel for where someone's level is. And, like, that's why it's always important to watch, because if you look at the results, the recent results, sometimes you can be like, oh, well, that was a bad win, or that was an easy win, that was a bad loss. But sometimes, you know, the result doesn't tell the story. So, anyway, interested to see this next one.
Yeah, we're going to get to all these matches. Unfortunately, on this show, no Zico, Zachary Cohn couldn't make it. Not because of the dogs and the incident that wrapped him up last time. Everything on his end there. But I want to bring this up, too, because, you know, as bettors like yourself, you know, Zico is in the futures market. He's been on a hot streak there. As we're going to get to, no Alcaraz and Sinner. Alcaraz loses to Rublev. Sinner pulls out before his match versus Felix Auger-Aliassime. But I mean, Pam, start with you. Like, is there a worse way to lose a future than just a withdrawal late in the tournament? Because that's just a brutal way to go.
I know that Zico had even tweeted, like, oh, we should get refunded. Enough of the refunds. You lost. You're doing a tournament that requires multiple matches to win. It just comes to the precedent of like, hey, you're a gambler. That's what happens. I've been on the winning end of it. I've been on the losing end of it. Check with your book. As always, check with your book.
Oh,
and
yeah.
See if it makes any difference. Is there a worse way to wait? No. We've been talking about, we literally on the last show, what was that, 2 days ago, talked about, hey, Sinner is at risk here right now because of the amount of tennis that he's been playing. And now we're hearing the rumblings of, well, he's also adding in extra things to strengthen his body. And what did I say? You're trying to do this in the middle of the year, in the middle of clay season. Yeah, you're putting yourself at overexertion, and it just kind of finally caught up to him. Now it's a possible injury that could keep him out for we don't know how long. Is it going to be 100% here at Roland Garros? We don't know. So it's not an entire surprise also. It's just a bummer that we didn't get to see him possibly win. Yeah.
Well, shout out to, I mean, Zico did bring up the point before in texting that the line made very little sense when it first came out against Felix. So they kind of had an idea that.
Hinted that.
That was, so obviously, Kenny, I mean, looking at it, it was less surprising that he pulled out given what we saw and what he said. Alcaraz losing to Rublev was a little bit of a stunner. I know it's his first match back. Rublev hadn't had this result in quite some time. Got his head on straight. And really served well in that match. That's the one thing. I know there's going to be rust on Alcaraz's side, and we expect him to ramp up. But Andre Rublev won 80% of his first serve points, and that's a stat I was not expecting to see.
I mean, again, though, if you look at the season for Rublev, and he did have that that cold streak. He lost in Monte Carlo to Alexei Popperin. He had some tough results. But, I mean, in Australia, when he beat Alex de Minaur, speaking of Australians, he served unbelievably well in that match. And I think obviously the second serve is what we always talk about with him because it is his weakness. But the first serve has actually improved a decent amount from where it was last year. And it was in still a very good place. I mean, that's why Rublev has been able to have all the success he has at this level. Looking back as far as Hong Kong, I was one of probably the few watching that tournament just because, you know, we're all so eager to get tennis started in January. And his service games were, I mean, that's just what I've been seeing all year from him. Like his service games were either 30 seconds or they went to deuce, like, but there was no in between. I mean, and so that told me really, there was a little bit of rust at the beginning of a season, but like he was serving so well to start the season on hard courts. And just, you know, there would be a few games where he would just get tilted and get in his own head and get upset with a couple of return winners that were slapped for, you know, that down the line. But like, I think his serve has looked really good all year. So, you know, I think we probably forgot because he lost four matches in a row. I certainly did. I didn't say it last show, but it makes sense to me anyway. And I do feel like, yeah, we talked about the struggles of Alcaraz holding serve on clay. They came through. And like I said, when you're talking about a top 10 player, a top five player, you know, you can't really afford to be dropping your serve that much because these guys do defend their serve very well, yeah, even with a weakness on the second. Because the first is dynamite normally.
Yeah, and I got to give credit. I know we like to have fun, and he's fun in the chat, but I had to look this stat up, and this is a real stat. Rublev's 13-0 against Spanish guys on clay on the tour. That is, I guess, kind of a remarkable thing to see, but, you know, props to Gustav Gerulaitis for that stat. And also, you know, looking at it, I mean, Pam, this is kind of where we're going to be. I mean, I know Alcaraz and Sinner are getting there, but we're looking into the post big three era where you can just expect those guys to always make semis week in, week out.
I'm going to have to bookmark that stat because that is insane. There's trends, and then there's like, no, like there's something to it. I think there's potentially something to this with Rublev. I like what I've seen from him as far as like, I'm never going to put Rublev in like even the top five category for myself of anything when it comes to any tournament, any surface, being the best in the world. Like, is he a top 10 player? Sure. Is he a top
10? He's got to win a quarterfinal in a major.
He's got to win it. It's not, even if he does, like, I'm going to be looking at, well, who was in there? Who was not there? Was there like kind of like a Dominic Thiem type of situation of, well, did he get there by default? Like, I don't think there's anything to Rublev's game that tells me, is it going to be, he's kind of like Tsitsipas, where you're going to be consistent throughout a lot of tournaments and you're going to potentially be running deep into the fourth round, the quarterfinals, sure. But am I ever going to put him in the serious contender list to actually win any of these? No. There's just nothing to his game that says that he can exploit other people's weaknesses, whereas his weaknesses can be exploited quite often. So because of that, I'm just not as convinced that Rublev is top three, top five.
Well, I'm fascinated to see what the picks are going to be great today on the show. Just going to spoil that a little bit.
Yeah, well, first of all, I mean, yeah, I think the comparison to Tsitsipas is pretty apt given, you know, they do attack with the serve and the forehand. I would say Tsitsipas' serve is a little bit better, but in the same sense, like, I think the thing we saw with Tsitsipas is that the tour kind of passed him by in the sense that he did make up Pam. Like, don't disrespect him for the Roland Garros final that he was up two sets.
Yes, I remember back to that often.
Back then, right? He had a kind of a weak generation before him. I mean, Medvedev has been, as we've seen in the head-to-head, someone he's never been able to really figure out. I mean, they had those weird matches last year on hard courts when he did his whole little dance, and Medvedev was just being very weird in Canada. But you know, like, there were really not that many people in his way. And then you see Carlos Alcaraz come through, and he hits a ball at Carlos Alcaraz's head because he finally realizes I'm just not as good as this guy. We've really been seeing a very special generation of players coming up, whether it's Alcaraz, Rune, Sinner, Jack Draper and Ben Shelton. I just have to throw them in there because, of course, it's Tennis Bets Live. But, you know, this is a really talented crop of young players. And I think if Rublev were playing this tennis and he was, you know, and this was 2018, you know, we did see him beat Roger Federer in Cincinnati. He had some really good results. That's just kind of how this sport goes sometimes. Sometimes you just, the timing of your career just doesn't really work out. Andy Roddick with Roger Federer, winning more than one Grand Slam. It just happens. So I think that's really what I would say about Rublev. But I will also say, like, he is on that Khachanov level, and not just to profile him as another Russian, but, like, that is a scenario where I do feel like when he gets to these matches, quarterfinal of a Grand Slam, he plays at his absolute best level. He plays, I mean, he's a really good tennis player. And it has to be that the guy, whether it's Medvedev, Djokovic, Sinner now on the other side of the net, Alcaraz, it just has to be that those guys don't play their best tennis. And it'll happen. It'll happen once, and he will win a quarterfinal at a slam, or maybe one of those guys will get injured or upset early in a tournament. But, you know, I would agree with you that he is capped, but I would also add the caveat that, like Tsitsipas, you know, I just feel like their careers didn't time out quite as well. They were as old as Thiem was. You know, we would be talking about these guys like they were Dominic Thiem, and maybe even more so because they wouldn't have had the mental issues that he had to go through and then the injury after winning the U.S. Open. So, you know, I feel for Rublev, and I also feel for him because he's going to lose to Taylor Fritz again.
Well, there goes the spoiler. I would say as a gambling show, too, those are all great points. But knowing that, look, when we get to these Masters, when there are people that are injured, that are rusty, there's opportunity. There's going to be value there. So that's what we're trying to highlight as well. We did have one match. Remember, you know, there was no Sinner match today against Felix. He gets the walkover. So one match in the rear view, and it's Iga Swiatek doing what she does on clay, beating Madison Keys 6-1, 6-3. And I just want to read a couple stats here, just a quick one. Pam, it's the 11th time. She's 22 years old. She's into her 11th 1,000-level Masters final. And in 18 draws on clay, she's reached the final in 10 Masters events. So she's over 50% getting finals on clay events. So this is her surface. The competition's going to be a little steeper in the final, but Iga just doing what she does.
I think when it comes to Iga, I'm definitely not discrediting any of her accomplishments. She's amazing. But she's also come into the era of women's tennis right now where there hasn't really been anybody of the power hitters. Now they're starting to. We're starting to see a little bit more here within the last even 6 months. But Ash Barty's gone. Even Simona Halep. Like, these are all players who at one point were all threats and then they went away. And then it's just kind of like there's a little bit of like there's just hasn't really been the level of competition. It's been Iga Swiatek and then the rest of the field. And we're just waiting for the rest of the field to catch up. And maybe now we are starting to. Clay court, still absolute dominance. I would never, ever, ever want to bet against her on like a Roland Garros surface. But for Madrid, I'm still not 100% convinced that she is the overwhelming favorite, which is she is right now of the remaining players, that she should be the favorite for Madrid right now.
Well, Kenny, we got the top three players essentially in the world. I know the rankings could be interesting depending on what Sabalenka does, but Iga's going to play either Rybakina or Sabalenka, which is pretty good. Anywhere you can get it, that's a good matchup. And, you know, we'll see. I agree with Pam in the sense that she's not going to run away with these titles on clay. She has a position of dominance, but she's going to have a tough match next round, however it goes.
Yeah, it'll be fun. I mean, look, I think we've talked enough about how good Iga Swiatek is. I want to just talk about Madison Keys for a second because we just talked about Taylor Fritz. or we didn't, but we almost did. She's kind of the female Taylor Fritz, I would think. I mean, just someone who came in with a lot of expectations as an American, hard hitter, big serve forehand. And, you know, I think this was a really good tournament for her. She beats Coco Gauff. She beats Ange Jabeur, Samsonova in the second round. Very big win. And the Bagoo match as well in the first round, two tiebreaks. That was it. That was a gritty win as well. Like, she's just, she played really well last year at the US Open. She should have made the final. It was kind of a collapse from her. And I mean, she has so much talent. This is another situation in Madrid where the conditions will help a player that doesn't normally have the success on clay. Keys has obviously played a ton of matches in her career and actually holds probably a better clay court record than you would think, but just not nearly as many clay matches as someone like Swiatek or, you know, a lot of other players on tour. You could look at, you know, Maria Sakkari, what have you. So good run for her here. I mean, we know that Swiatek is going to beat her on clay, no matter what sort of altitude we're dealing with. And I do feel like we're going to have a cracking affair in that final, whether it's Sabalenka or Rybakina. But shout out to Madison Keys, because it was a good close to last season for her. Wasn't the best beginning. She missed the Australian Open. Took her a little while to get her feet underneath her. And this has been a great run here. So maybe this is another scenario where Madison Keys can have a good season. She's 29 years old. It's really now or never. I'm not going to say she's going to win a Grand Slam this year, but I'm encouraged after what we saw last year to end and after the struggles with the injuries earlier in the year, she's looking good again. So shout out to Maddie.
I'm just thinking about how injured I would get if I tried to hit one of those sliding Iga backhands on the clay, where it's just like a graceful move for her. And it's
speak for yourself there.
Oh yeah. I forgot.
Agile.
That's your signature shot. I did forget that. Well, hey, you know what? I love it. Well, when we put our picks in the semifinal match coming up, the final match of the day, is going to be Aryna Sabalenka and Rybakina. And you know, when you book these shows, you're just hoping for some good discussion and lively debates. And as the booker on this show, we go back and forth because you're each on opposite ends of the spectrum. Sam is going to go Rybakina even money. Kenny's going to be on the Sabalenka side. This is a really close line. Sabalenka is at the minus 120 range. We'll see if there is a shift, but Pam is riding Rybakina, who staved off elimination as close as possible in the last match, but you like her to beat Sabalenka here.
Well, if I'm on Rybakina to win the entire tournament, of course I'm going to like her in the underdog role against Sabalenka, because this was one of the predictions that if they came in the head-to-head later in the semifinals, then she would come out the victor. I just really am holding true to that having a superior serve on this faster surface in Madrid because of the altitude is what's going to be enough to get things done. We've seen Rybakina be able to match pace of her opponents with ease. We saw it in her ability multiple times against Sabalenka's deep shots in previous matches that they've faced each other. And Sabalenka, while she has gotten better with her serve, it is still historically one of the areas of her weaknesses. So we've seen her with a lot of like double fault counts in previous matches that tends to kind of creep up. Even here in Madrid, she's had 14 double faults in all three of the matches that she's gone a full three sets. That's not a good weakness to have when you're going up against Rybakina that can hold serve pretty steady. So I'm going to hold that it's going to be the serve, the power hitter, the big player. Rybakina is going to get it done as the underdog.
So Kenny, on the Sabalenka side, I'll let you have the floor here, but I will say the Andreeva match was the first time this tournament that she was clean from start to finish, where she definitely didn't have any dips. So was that match any influence in your pick, or were you just feeling Sabalenka in this matchup where she does lead the head-to-head? Is that why, or is there another reason why you're on Aryna?
I mean, a lot of that goes into it. It's also a gut feel thing because the head-to-head has been pretty even. She did lose in Brisbane to Rybakina earlier this year. If you watched that match, most of you didn't because it was at like 3 a.m. It was a weird match. She just mentally was, I think, looking forward to the Australian Open. Rybakina came out and just rocked her early. So I think in theory, you know, you look at this and you say, okay, well, yeah, she won in Brisbane, she lost at the Masters Cup, right? But how important is that at the end of the season? And then she wins in Beijing. Quick courts, they've never played on clay, but on the quicker courts, the last two times, she's won this head-to-head. And then I look at Sabalenka, you know, as a two-time winner of Madrid. Rybakina has just never had the success here that you'd think that she would have. You know, she lost to Jill Teichmann in the round of 16 2 years ago, last year, losing to Anna Kalinskaya in her first match, and then in her second match in 2021, losing to Elise Mertens. You know, I mean, aside from Jill Teichman, not the worst losses in the world. We know Kalinskaya can play some ball, but this is a player I love. She's 30-4 this year. She is going to win a lot more tournaments. She obviously is coming off of a win in Stuttgart. I think it's maybe a lot of tennis for her. Sabalenka having her number in the past, and perhaps Rybakina takes the foot off the gas a little bit here after rolling her in Brisbane. I would also mention that after the bagel in the first set, that match got very, very interesting in the second set, and the double faults creeping back in for Sabalenka after she seemed to be over those numbers, definitely a little bit of a cause for concern here. But I think she locks in for this match. This is a head-to-head that she's been comfortable in. And again, you know, one set in Brisbane, does that alter my thinking? I don't think so. I thought she looked really good against Mira Andreeva in a match that I thought we might see Andreeva win. But she can match Rybakina in the power department. She probably is still the most powerful player on tour right now with the serve and the forehand. And I think she's going to win this match. I think she's been a little bit disrespected by the line. I do feel like with her history here, I know, but -120, a two-time winner here against someone who's never had success and has had a lot of success on tour and on clay around this tournament the last 2 years, but just not at this tournament. I think the line tells you what you need to know here. I think Rybakina is the bait, so to speak. You think, oh, well, she has that. Look, that's sort of how tennis betting works sometimes. It seems like a lot of the arguments would be made for Rybakina here and they would be justified. And then you look at the line and there's a reason. And I do feel like Sabalenka, because she's won here twice, because she loves playing here, that's probably the reason why this is not a line that's skewed towards Rybakina. And I do feel like she should be -140 in this match. So I'll take her at -120.
Mitch, you be the deciding factor now. Go.
Oh man.
Yeah, give an opinion, Mitch. You never do that.
We don't have Zico. Give the opinion.
Zico not here. By the way, just as an aside before I give an opinion, I was flying the over-under stats, Kenny. We're not calling anybody cowards for playing it. People want to know what the over-unders are. So, you know, those are opinions as well. That said, I'm on the Sabalenka side today, given where we are playing this match. That was, Kenny, your point that swayed me the most, was that this is Madrid clay, where she has dominated. She beat Iga here last year, and probably the match, I would argue, that was maybe Sabalenka's best match last year. So,
we'll talk about it on the men's side too, but sometimes there's really tight head-to-heads and stuff like that does matter. You know, Richard Gasquet on the clay in France, like, you know, on the hard courts in Montpellier, like 2 years ago, having a weird run. Everyone's like, where does this come from? It's like, oh, well, actually he's always played well here. Like sometimes that stuff matters. Maybe it doesn't matter today. Who knows? But I see in the chat, like I get it, you know, Rybakina is, again, why is she not the favorite? If she's undefeated on clay this year, if you would think in theory, she's got Sabalenka's number now after the head-to-head recently, especially on the faster surfaces. I think Sabalenka gets her revenge here, moves out to what would it be, 6-2 or 5-2 against Rybakina head-to-head. I'm not counting World Tennis League. Sorry, World Tennis League fellows. I
count it. So we're going to count that one.
Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at newbalance.com.
All right. More with Tennis Bets Live here. Kenny Ducey, Pamela Maldonado. We got some men's matches to discuss as well. One quarterfinal match left, and then we're going to go into the semifinal tomorrow. And Kenny, only one playing on this one. I think you're laying some juice here. You're going to go money line Medvedev?
Yes, I am. Medvedev money line. I'm nervous because no one's going to care what I say because they know
Are you nervous because of the Illuminati?
Because of the Illuminati controlling the scoring and the roof, as the new Medvedev said. It's just not a good matchup for Lehechka. It's not. He struggles against good defenders because he can't. I talked about the patterns are very predictable with him. He makes a ton of errors. We saw that with Cerundolo and Fritz yesterday. It just came down to who made more unforced errors. It's going to be Lehechka here, obviously, because Medvedev never makes unforced errors and serving well here in Madrid. And again, you know, this is – I think a little bit of a fortunate spot for Lehecka to be in after playing Rafa not at 100%. Rafa also had his say in that match. It was very, very close. And I think I would also say that we saw it with Andy Murray and Jiří Lehecka earlier in the year. Like, these are the types of matches. Tsitsipas aside, because I think everyone thinks they can beat Tsitsipas because he does have those glaring holes in his game. I think this is a match where Lehecka just, I don't want to say chokes, but maybe is a little bit nervous, doesn't play his best tennis, misses his spots. I think playing Medvedev, you lose your confidence. And I think that's going to be really key and paramount to his success here, Lehecka. So I think this is a mismatch and you're just getting a discount here, honestly, because we are at altitude. Medvedev is not the same on clay, although he's been so much better over the last couple of years. So I think this is a match. I mean, on a hard court, like, Medvedev's -300. So I'm going to take Medvedev here.
I love the, when we say altitude, it's like the drinking game. So bottoms up, everybody. We said Madrid altitude again.
We can say they're up.
This, yeah, exactly. And you know, Pam, Kenny brings up another point. Is this the letdown spot, the emotional letdown spot of after the Rafa match and the tribute and everything that went down? And now you got to go back out and play the octopus.
You know, I don't really have a strong opinion on this matchup because I initially wanted to back Lehecka because his serve is just so strong on the surface. And what we've seen from Medvedev is, and we've seen it from other players too, not just him, but on the faster surface, it is still clay. You should be having like an abbreviated backswing, but because he's so used to having like a full follow through, it just hasn't been. He's not 100% for the reasons why you want to back Medvedev for being the baseliner right behind Novak Djokovic, if not ahead of him, is a little bit muted here on this surface. And giving Lehecka the edge when it comes to a lot of free points with his serve. So because of that, I really think one of these sets can go to tiebreak, of which I would probably give it to Lehecka for being the better server. But I think this has the potential to go three sets. And then it really just becomes more of a toss-up. So if I really think that on this surface, because it is clay, because it is Madrid, because I've seen and liked what I've from Lehecka in this tournament, I'm going to take value on the underdog. But I don't really have a strong case to want to put money on it. So instead, I'm just going to watch back. I think this could be a very interesting, good matchup. I don't think it's going to be a deciding two-set victory 12-5 to either player.
Is this the match where Medvedev just like, kind of throws away the first set, looks upset, disgruntled,
and then loses it all. Exactly.
What is there to be upset about when you're playing Jiří Lehecka?
I was waiting for it. I was waiting for the.
He's going to give Medvedev everything he wants. That's the thing. It's just he's going to play Lehecka right in Medvedev's hands. Also has like,
so much confidence that he plays so freely. He takes so many risks, and when he's taking those high risk, low reward shots, like he can kind of come through a little bit and shock Medvedev. I would say maybe even Lehecka to win the first set. That could be a viable option here because he'll be able to. I think he has the power. And he definitely has the ability on the surface to kind of surprise.
It's going to be fun. And I think this is a match that, again, we're about to go to that one. We got a really fun match coming up on there. So I think it's going to be a good one. There is one men's semifinal match we got to get you. More picks from our panel. Rublev and Fritz. Given what you heard earlier on this show, you might think that people were tipping their hand one way or the other. But alas... Pam is on Rublev today, tomorrow, 1.5 -1.5. So just sandbagged us with that Rublev take before the
pick. Is this just like an opposite take? Like this is just like a debate show right at this point.
Yeah.
So the reason why I'm backing it is kind of just not even really anything to do with skill sets from either player. Like Andrei Rublev, he was very, what he said about his tournament, I loved his post-match interview where he was like, look, man, I was completely calm. Probably in the first time of his tennis career, the entire tennis match, he did not say one word. And because of even when he was losing, because of that mental attitude that he shifted in the one match that it's true. He didn't say anything. There was no annoyance from him when he was winning. No, when he was losing, nothing. Because of that mental mind shift, he actually is a formidable player. He can come through. And Fritz, I was so frustrated with Cerúndolo. He lost that match. Fritz didn't win that match in the end. That first set, you can kind of discount.
Well, he was dominating him.
At some point, the 6-1 in the first set, you can move on because a player decides, okay, let's move on to the next set. But Cerundolo had so many 30-all opportunities, and he got super aggressive. His court management was not there at all. He was going for shots that he shouldn't have been taking at the times that he shouldn't have been taking them. He was so impatient, and all Fritz had to do was sit back and be like, I know a mistake is coming from you, Cerundolo. I'm going to sit back and wait. Sure enough, one or two shots later, it happened. And Fritz confirmed what I saw with my eyes, and he was so honest in his interview, saying, Francisco made me look a lot better of an opponent. He started to make the mistakes, and great he did. Taylor hung around, waiting for him to make it. It was a missed opportunity from Cerundolo. If he had the type of patience that he had against Barov, against Fritz, and maybe that was the mistake, was maybe back-to-back top 10 wins, top 15 wins was maybe out of the bag of possibilities for him, but he just misplayed a lot of the big points against Fritz. So I'm going to go with Rublev. If he can keep with his mental mindset, he has an edge here when it comes to power on every asset.
Well, I'm glad you know now, Pam, why I don't like Francisco Cerundolo, because this guy could easily be 12 in the world, but this is what he does every match, right? So I think you're right that it's really hard to read into that specific match and say, yeah, well, okay, you know, if this is a big win for Fritz, right? Like I also would harp on last year as well. And last year when Fritz went to the Monte Carlo semis and met Andrei Rublev and lost in three tight sets, like this is a guy that's clearly shown strides on clay. I'm willing to concede that Francisco Cerundolo threw that match away, just like he's thrown his career away to this point. But this match I'm very excited about, because every single time every single time these guys play, I go back to YouTube. We are live on YouTube, so after this show is over, I recommend you do this as well. These two guys played. This is one of the most even head-to-heads on tour, and one of the most storied rivalries, despite the fact that, you know, it's not like it's Fritz Norrie where they meet once every 2 months. You know, they've met 8 times. Fritz is 5-3, but they met in the 2015 Junior Masters in China. And it's a very fun match to watch, because both of these guys play exactly the same as they played back then. Obviously they were 18 years old, but they look very similar. Their play style looks very similar. It's like watching them today, honestly. And again, it was a very fun third set you can find on the ITF YouTube page. But, you know, look, they're 8 days apart. They were born 8 days apart. They have played each other through the juniors, the next gen finals. These guys know each other very well. And I was.
Uh-oh, he's frozen.
Didn't just come from Madrid. It did come from Monte Carlo as well, where he beat our boy, or your guys' boy, and everyone else's boy, Jiří Lehečka. He beat Stefanos Tsitsipas. These are all clay wins. Wawrinka as well. He beat Team Vucevic the next week in Madrid. You know, you can kind of throw the team match away. But, you know, basically there was a little bit of a consistency developing here on clay. He made the semis in Geneva. He did win 2 matches at the French Open. He beat Arthur Rinderneck in what was a very fun match. So I think he's getting much better at the surface. And again, I would just point to the fact that these guys know each other incredibly well. And Fritz has moved ahead of Rublev when it comes to his ability to win this head-to-head. He's won four out of the last 5 meetings, the one in Monte Carlo last year where Rublev ended up winning the tournament. So it was probably A level Rublev. They went 3 sets. It was a very tight match. The second set wasn't that tight, but the third set was. And I just think we have to respect the way that he has grown on the surface and how good he looked in Madrid last year. I'll continue to say, maybe he didn't play his best match. He did smoke Cerundolo for an hour and a half, but he did maybe let up a little bit later in that second where, you know, he had Cerundolo up a set point and then ended up going to the tiebreak or actually maybe losing that set 7-5. Not quite sure, but basically, you know, it got away from him in the second, but he locked in the third, and just the serve, the forehand, the depth he's able to get on the ball is so impressive. And I think he's really played really well on this surface. He's been a gun in Madrid, and he's played really well this year as well. So 7-2 on clay this season. It's hard to ignore. Give me Taylor Fritz to win this match. He's really had Rublev's number now over the last 5 matches, and they've just played each other for their whole lives. So it's going to be very fun. Probably goes 3 sets. But the underdog here, I think, is barking. Where are those dogs now?
See, that's the difference between Kenny and I. He looks at win-loss records as if that's like a viable stat. I don't. I looked at head to head, see if they have experience against each other, but I'm more so just looking at how are you playing here at this specific tournament? Does your skill set match or kind of deviate a little bit? And how does it pair up to your opponent? I love that we're on opposite ends for both matches when it comes to the women's and the men's, because you've made a lot of good points. I think I've made some good points, and that's why we gave it to the masses of like, all right, here are our points, you decide. But all right, I'm going to take off my jacket because I'm freaking sweating.
I will. Cool. Yeah.
I'm sorry, guys.
I think that it's not it's definitely not the only thing to look at. And it's definitely, I mean, I've actually enjoyed fading head to heads in the past. Like I definitely don't think that it's the only deciding factor here, but like there is a certain point, Medvedev Rublev head to head, for example, you know, there's just skewed ones. Right. And I think when you mention that, like, do these players have familiarity? They do. They have a ton of familiarity. They've been playing each other for 9 years. Mm-hmm. And if one guy is just clearly now figured out the other guy, I think that's a little concerning for Rublev, despite the fact that they're on clay. That's why Rublev's the favorite. But last year on clay in Monte Carlo, slower conditions, windy conditions, colder conditions, like this was a match that Fritz really could have won. So that's a little scary for me if I'm a Rublev backer, that he did win that match, but it was a lot tighter than a lot of people thought it was going to be. And now we're seeing two straight years of Fritz performing at a higher level on clay than he's done in his career. And in Madrid, like you said, the conditions will help Rublev. He has the power, but so does Fritz. Fritz has one of the biggest forehand serve combos on tour, and his backhand is much better than Rublev. So I don't know. Again, it's been a fun match to watch every time they've played. It's going to be fun again tomorrow. I just think Fritz is definitely live as the underdog.
So then should we be looking at the over? You hate looking at overs.
I'm not.
Like, stop being a coward and pick a winner.
But you need the over question as well. I think that there's definitely a match where you talk about the familiarity aspect. I'm sure that Rublev's going to come out with a different game plan. I don't know what it's going to be, because Fritz doesn't have that many discernible weaknesses. The drop shot's not a strength of Rublev's. And meanwhile, Fritz is actually, you know, Fritz is kind of mixing in a dropper now the last year. So that's been kind of a weapon for him.
He's adding to his game. He's adding.
It doesn't work very pretty, but it works.
That match at the US Open 2020, Rublev Fritz, really did change Fritz's trajectory. He lost a brutal match and really got to work after and kind of broke through. So we love to see it.
Hey, and then the semi at Indian Wells as well, when he ended up beating Rafa in the final. That was another match. He came in, I believe, as the underdog.
They play great matches. These two play great matches against each other. It's exciting. Well, last thing on this show, we got Medvedev Ljechka coming up momentarily. This has been fun with Pamela Maldonado and Kenny Ducey, Tennis Bets Live. How does the weekend go? I just want some generic finals predictions for how you're seeing this play out and maybe where the betting opportunities could be. Pam, how do you see it?
I'm sticking with Rybakina. She was my prediction pre-tournament. She's the futures pick that I did for the FanDuel video for Tennis Bets. I have to stick with her. I love, and I know that there was that somebody threw out there, but she's never won back-to-back titles. Yeah, well, a lot of people don't until you do. So I'm sticking that she does have the ability to beat Swiatek. We've seen her do it before, twice on clay. So I think that this is just she's in prime position too. So get through today with Sabalenka, and then we can get through to the finals, or you have a hedge opportunity. When it comes to the men, it would be so Rublev of him to win this tournament when we've been doing nothing but putting him down for the last few shows for the last few months and just come out the winner and surprise everybody. So,
okay. It's a good story arc for Rublev. I agree with the content on this show. Kenny, both draws. How does it shake out?
Well, first of all, the ghost of Girolatis, I did say that Fritz did beat Rublev in Indian Wells in the semis, and he ended up winning in the final against Rafa, which we all saw in Breakpoint. That was, just like Mitch was saying, something that kind of changed the trajectory of his career, that U.S. Open win, and then that step taking out Rublev in the semis, which, again, was a match that I think what I may have confused people with, that I do think he was the underdog in that match. But yes, the finals, I think I'm going to be a little bold here, because I mean, that you just expect that out of me, right? You already know what I'm going to say. I'm going to say Taylor Fritz wins Monte Carlo. He will win Monte Carlo maybe next year. He's going to win Madrid. I think Medvedev gets through this match, but I think that this is, we've seen Medvedev sort of hit a wall on clay. He's not quite the same. I don't think Fritz is going to have a lot of head-to-head success against Medvedev in his career, but this is, I think, a gettable match for him. He's got to get past Rublev. He's done it four of the last five times. he's figured this out. And I do feel like this is a tournament that he could just steal, because that's sort of the theme with Madrid, aside from Zverev and Sabalenka, who I'll get to in a second. But that, I think this is that we have a surprise champion here. I think Taylor Fritz now with Sinner and Alcaraz out of the draw, I think he can win this tournament. I think he does. And I also will say on the women's side that Sabalenka wins it, because you look at the head-to-head between Sabalenka and Swiatek, and the head-to-head between Swiatek and a lot of these other players, and you're just like, oh, well, ooh, that was interesting. She lost in this final. You know what? No, I don't know. I'm going to say Swiatek wins. I'm changing my mind. Sabalenka, you look at her finals, she's not good in finals. The finals record's not good. She won some finals and everyone was like, oh, she can win finals now. But it's still just not that good over the last 3 years or 4 years. So I don't think so.
I think it would also be a really good Taylor Fritz story, because he, what, a week after no longer being American number one, comes out and is like, hey,
rage.
Rage, so, like revenge factor.
Total rage. Yeah.
Girlitis, I'm sorry.
So you're getting a lot of flack in the chat, which we love the chat, by the way, but yeah, you gotta pronounce legends' names correctly, or you're gonna hear from them. That said, do we see Medvedev in the final? Is that where we're leaning? Is it a Medvedev final? We haven't said Felix's name. Lehechka can make a run. Do we see Medvedev just waltz into the final again on clay?
I feel like I haven't even, like, I've watched his match and I feel like I haven't seen anything. Like, I feel like I haven't seen or paid attention to Medvedev. Like, we're in May already and I don't pay attention to him like ever. So yeah, it would be, of course he ends up in the final.
Well, then he better hope it's not for your Rublev's sake. I hope that doesn't happen, because we've kind of seen.
No, Medvedev owns Felix. It's again, you know, a stylistic nightmare for him, just like the Lehechka match or Lehechka against Medvedev. Like, this is, we saw it in Australia. It's just, and Medvedev wasn't even playing that well in Australia. It's just very hard for Felix to sustain 10 to 20 shot rallies and win. And that's just exactly what's going to happen here. And I was, you know, I championed Felix before this tournament. I said, look out. And he had a great run here. He's now found himself in the semis because Sinner just was a coward and he was scared of Felix. But this is, I think, this is two straight opponents for Medvedev that he's going to be licking his chops. This is exactly the type of player he wants to face back to back. I don't know if he wins the final, if Fritz gets there, but if it's Medvedev, Rublev, again, you know, I hate to be the head-to-head guy today because that's all I've talked about, but these are matchups we've seen so many times. It's just hard not to talk about them. We know the story with Medvedev and Rublev. But then again, like, I don't know, on clay, I did sort of say Medvedev sort of just, I don't think he's going to get any better than this on clay. Like, we just know he's sort of plateaued on this surface. He's tailored his game to be better, but he's just not going to be the same dominant player he is, just because the defending just doesn't really play up as much. Rublev could win that one. I think the winner of Rublev Fritz wins this tournament. I think Medvedev beats Felix. I think Swiatek beats Sabalenka.
I'll say one last point. I know I talked about Rublev winning the tournament, but I would like, from a fan perspective, for it to be Fritz for the sake of American tennis. It's just, it's still not ever going to, I feel like it's still so much room for growth, and Ben Shelton is doing his cause. He's doing his contributions to make it fun and exciting for people around the area. But I mean, adding two American men would really help the cause. So if we can have Taylor Fritz back into relevance again for American tennis, along with Ben Shelton, I would love for that to happen.
We all thought it was going to be Tommy Paul that might win a clay court Masters. And look at Taylor Fritz, two wins away.
Look at him now. Well, guys and girl, this was fun. We put everything into our efforts into Madrid here, so we'll see how it shakes out. This was fun on Tennis Bets Live. Reminder, you can find all the episodes on the podcast platforms. You can also watch the re-airs on Facebook, Twitter, and the Tennis Channel YouTube.
Go to Tennis Bets for
more content. Yeah, Kenny's still going to be apologizing for that one, but fun stuff. We'll see how it goes. Thanks to Pamela Maldonado. Thanks to Kenny Ducey. Thanks to everybody watching or listening. We're back next week, the end of next week, to look into Rome, do some housekeeping as well. But until then, for Pamela Maldonado and Kenny Ducey, I'm Mitch Michaels.
Go next.
Thanks for watching and listening.
This is Josh Hart jersey, by the way.
We'll see you next week on Tennis Bets Live.